This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown! Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He played. He's the worst ever!
Bussy up the right sideline!
Yeah, he's got to go. He's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS championship.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, the college editor here. Dave Campbell's Texas Football sitting in Austin with his Verde behind him. Mike Craven. Mike, how are you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. 1 week closer to spring practice. It's already here for Houston and UTEP. So, man. Off season, done seas.
Yeah, I'm about to start hitting the road and getting these magazine, this magazine content. Of course, with us as well is our producer, everyone's favorite Mal Pal, Mallory Hartley. Mallory, how are you?
I'm good. Gearing up for girls high school state basketball this week with you.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing stuff down in San Antonio.
Yep. We're going to be heading down tomorrow, recording this on Tuesday. By the time you guys hear this, we'll probably be already down there in San Antonio. Me and you will be there the whole week through Saturday. So we're in for some nonstop basketball, basically.
Yes.
And then I'll be back down next weekend too. So for boys. So mm-hmm. Yeah, these are pretty busy for everybody. But by the way, a little tease. We have a big announcement coming up. We've already announced one. Carter Yates posted that his official hiring. So he'll be working with us. He'll be working remotely for the time being. He's still a student there at UT. So we're working remotely as he finishes up, and then he'll be joining us full time in the office, in the studio. We'll have him on Republic of Football, things like that. So he's the newest member of the college sports staff. Mike Craven, what's up?
Being around all of you makes me feel really bad about what I was doing as a senior in high school. Cause like Mallory was interning at Dave Campbell's and got this job full time out of college. Yeah. I know you were already working for the newspaper down there and then went kind of straight into this. We don't need to get into what I was doing at a senior in college.
Why not?
It was not furthering my career as you and Carter and Mallory. And so, yeah, he kind of intimidates me. I wish I would have been on top of things back then. But I'm excited. We keep growing in an industry that is shrinking. So, you know, good things on the horizon here.
It's exciting to see, just when I started 2 years ago, how small the college side really was. And it's just crazy to see how much it's just grown in the past year and a half.
Oh yeah, 100%. And we'll see, like I said, we'll be seeing more of Carter on this show. You know, he'll be appearing elsewhere. Obviously, go check out his stories. He was an intern for us over the summer and wrote some stories for us in the fall. So he's done some really good features for us, and you know, it was kind of an easy pick once we started to really look for it. So to make him a full-time member. So yeah, we're excited to add him to the team. We have another announcement that will be announced on Wednesday at noon. This will be going up earlier than usual because, like I said, me and Mallory have to get on the road. So this will be going up probably Tuesday night, early Wednesday. And later in the day on Wednesday, we'll be having a pretty big announcement. This one's college specific, but it does relate to this podcast in a way. And that's kind of what the hint I'll give there. But we're very excited about that. So stay tuned to TexasFootball.com. DCTF on Twitter and Facebook, and then DCTF CFB as well on Twitter. Be sure you're following that account. So yeah, that'll be some pretty big stuff. All right, let's talk a little bit about, there was some news that dropped Matt Stepp with his patented Stepp bomb. Listen, when Stepp teases, typically Stepp will tease these out, Stepp bomb coming or whatever. And it's kind of give or take if it's like a really big news drop. Sometimes it's just like, oh, it's a pretty good job opening up or whatever. This one he teased at, and we knew what it was, obviously, but he teased that pretty well, saying like, no, this one's legit. All right, so Rice hires John Kay from North Shore, Galena Park North Shore. I believe 3 out of the last 4 years, 6A state title champions. Obviously, they were the runners-up last year to Duncanville. I mean, one of the most decorated high school coaches in modern football. He's joining the Rice staff as linebackers coach. Now, go listen to TFT if you want to hear about more about John Kay, and you know they ended up making the hire to promote from within. I do want to hint on the Rice side of this on as we talk about for this podcast, because this is the second, obviously this is the more decorated coach that Mike Bloomgren's nabbed, but this is the second big time high school coach out of Houston that he's nabbed in his tenure. 2018, he gave Drew Sabota a chance out of Klein Collins to coach running backs. He obviously went to Alabama. I don't know if he went right to Alabama, but regardless, he's obviously at UNT now. To get John Kay and to get John Kay to as a position coach, right? Not as a coordinator, right? He didn't have to entice him that way. Craven, you know, what are your initial thoughts? And then what does it say about Rice's development? The fact that they were able to nab one of the most decorated coaches still right now, definitely in 6A coaching to join their staff.
Yeah, let's start on the Rice side. I think it's a big, you know, statement of intent for them. You know, they want to recruit better in Houston. They want to recruit more high school. And if you look at this 2023 recruiting class they just brought in, it was 20 or 30 spots higher than the previous few. And so they're doing a great job. Marco Relegato and those guys are doing fantastic job recruiting. I think John Kay just gives you another, you know, clip in the chamber, if you will, right? Like, you know, who's a better hired gun than that? And so, you know, I think for Rice, it's a good step forward. They're moving into the American. So there's a little bit of more money in that assistant coaching pool, a bigger job prestige wise with the expanded playoff and everything. It feels like a lot of colleges are going all in on athletics because there's possibilities there that weren't there previously. So I think it helps on the recruiting trail, obviously, because of his connections in Houston. But anytime you can add one of the 5 or 10 best football minds in high school football, it's a good thing. I've said this many a times. There's two teams that when you went to practice, it felt like you were at a college football practice. And one was Lake Travis and what they do there. And then the other one's Galena Park North Shore. Like, it is regimented. And I would imagine he comes in and he's almost an associate head coach, assistant head coach, same way that Joey McGuire was for Matt Rhule and Baylor. And so the other part of this is, you know, back in the day, I felt like a guy like John Kay, we would ask, well, why did he take a step backwards, right, and be a position coach? You know, wouldn't he get a head coaching job or at least a coordinator job? You know, but when I was doing that feature story on Jeff and Joey, you know, even talking back to Todd Dodge and then talking to those two guys, you know, they talked about how invaluable those 3 or 4 years as an assistant coach was to kind of relearn the process, learn what's different about the college game. I think it's really smart for John Kay to take this kind of dip into the pool. And I wouldn't be surprised in 3, 4, 5 years, he's running one of the programs here in this state.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because, yeah, you would assume that, okay, sure, you're at the pinnacle of 6A, right? This isn't even a smaller classification, 3A, 4A, whatever. This is 6A. You're more or less coaching like pre-college teams, right? You're a year in, year out. And yeah, I guess eventually you do kind of wonder what's next for your career, right? Some people like a Gary Joseph, right? Loves to just be the king and just loves to get all the accolades and retire on top, which is with theoretically what he'll do at Katy. But yeah, you kind of do wonder, these guys are, for all their mentoring and all that stuff, I think there is like a sense of, ego's the wrong word, but there is a sense of like wanting more, right?
Sure.
Like there is a sense of like these guys, you have to be that, in my opinion, there has to be a sense of ego to be a head coach because you got to be able to do this over and over and over again. And if you win, you got to want to win again and you got to want to win again. And so eventually, unless you just want to keep doing this, you know, like I mentioned with Gary Joseph, you want to keep doing the same thing in high school, you probably look somewhere else. And so I think, yeah, that's a good point that you brought up about McGuire and Jeff Traylor, you know, needing that kind of pipeline feed to maybe humble yourself a bit, right? Learn different things, kind of learn how to be an assistant again, because you learn the tricks of the trade, right?
Going to high compliance school. And
recruiting, things like that.
The strength and conditioning can't, you know, like just things that in high school you just don't have, even at a place like North Shore. It takes a few years to learn that. And yep. Jeff and Joey said that those were, you know, like Traylor even said when he first applied for the UTSA job, when Frank Wilson got it, he's glad he didn't get it then because he wasn't ready yet then either, you know? Right. And so you need a few years in that. I think it's important to do that. And I think he's going to do great for Rice. And he doesn't have to leave the city and probably doesn't even have to sell his house. You know what I mean? And so just a perfect way to dip your toe into the college ranks. And if he gets there and he doesn't like it, you know, there's going to be a lot of suitors on line one, right?
Oh, yeah.
He'll be able to get right back into it and lead a top program. So he's going to do okay. I'm excited to see how it goes. And, you know, it just continues the trend of THSEA's takeover of the college football ranks in the state. You cannot go to any of these staffs mm-hmm. and not be able to go, oh, there's one. Add Rice to the list.
Yep, definitely. All right, so of course, Matt Stebb broke that Willie Gaston will take over at North Shore, so he instantly becomes, this is not a high school podcast, but the fact that Duncanville and North Shore could meet again potentially, and then all of a sudden you get two black head coaches in the state championships in 6A would be insane. That's a obvious promotion for him. I think that was also pretty strategic by John Kay to maybe say, I'm leaving, here's the guy, right? So definitely something to watch going forward there.
You know, we all try to not have hater tendencies, but like, I'm kind of mad at Matt Stepp right now. You know, like I found out about the news on like Friday or Saturday and was like very excited to have found out about this news, only to find out that like Stepp had known for days and he was on top of it, you know, and it was like, can I scoop my coworker? How does this work? Like, I don't, you know, because we don't have the same ethics. You know what I mean? Sure, like, sure. I'm not a high school reporter. I don't necessarily care when you tell your team or not. You know, news is news is news. So it hurt me all weekend. I was probably in a bad mood all weekend over it.
Regardless, we still got it. And of course, yeah, Matt's, of course, that's just like, that's Matt Stepp in a nutshell, right? He's like, yeah, I knew for 6 months. Uh-huh. He told me it last year's spring
camp. Yeah. Welcome to the party, bud.
All right. Anyway, let's move on to a couple of our Texas 10s. We are going to go with tight ends. So we did tight ends and then offensive linemen dropped this morning as we're recording on Tuesday. Craven, let's start with tight ends real quick. So I think number one, I don't know if anybody can argue with this, Jatavion Sanders. I mean, absolute breakout season. You remember covering him as recruiting. He was adamant that he could play tight end, right? He was adamant that he could be a top caliber pass catcher, and not a lot of programs believed him, right? They said, yeah, sure, you can play tight end. And then eventually they would hope to work him to edge rusher or something. Last year when Texas needed a pass catcher desperately, when Xavier Worthy was kind of plateauing, he stepped up in a big way, 613 catches, 5 touchdowns. You know, obviously he was the easy one. Now you get to the, I don't want to say the harder ones, because Donovan Green, I think, flashed a lot. And then Varquise Gums from North Texas, I think, flashed a lot. Were there any of these rankings that were like struggles for you? I think the first three were pretty okay, in my opinion. I don't know. Is that saying too much for you?
Yeah, I think the first three were set in stone. JT Sanders, obviously number one with the year he had, just the overall talent that he has, former five-star guy. We've all seen the one-handed catches and everything he did as a high school recruit. I'd imagine he's a first-round draft pick in the 2024 NFL draft if he has another season like he did today. Because as we've seen with like Jason Kelce, and like that position is hot, right? Like if you can play that kind of position, it's been proven in the NFL that you're, you know, as valuable as almost anything but a quarterback. And so I think he was number one, but then it was Green and Gums. You know, I'm a huge Varquise Gums fan. Like if we go back to my Fab 55 days, I had him ranked up there in the top 55 in the state when nobody else did, really. I was really big on him. He went to Decaney High School in spring. They always had a couple guys coming out there, and he's one the coaches on that staff really, you know, raved about. Really good in that North Texas offense. He basically, think about this, right? Like Jake, he took Jake Roberts' job.
And that's right, a guy who Jake Roberts is also on the list.
And that's the guy who just transferred to Baylor, right? You know, and so like he ran a guy out of there to a P5 program, basically. And both of them would have got snaps, and some of that was the coaching change and stuff. But by the end of the year, Gums was the pass catcher, the number one tight end as a receiver threat there between those duo. And so I thought the first three were pretty easy. You know, Jared Wiley's always been a weird guy to me because nowadays, when we think about tight end, we only think about their stats and their ability to catch the ball and split out and play flex and do all that kind of stuff. Wiley's a throwback, put your hand in the dirt, bully people, set an edge in the run game. How much value is that? You know, I think RJ Maryland is a better pass catcher, but I don't think he's there yet in terms of being a three down tight end. And so gave the edge to Jared Wiley there. And then once we get past Jack Bradley at 8, I don't know. I just had to keep the list going. It's called the Texas 10. So I had to get 10 on there, you know, like number 10 is a transfer from Kansas State that didn't play last year, really, you know? And so Texas Tech doesn't use their tight ends on an every down basis, you know, in the old school air raid stuff.
I was about to say, speaking of old school tight end, Baylor Cup is right in that model too, right? He's obviously been hurt, but he is very much in that Jared Wiley model. Were they in the same recruiting class?
That's a great question. Off the top of my head, I can't remember. They're definitely around each other.
Yeah, I think they're like at least within a year, if not the same year. But yeah, another guy who came from Brock where they just ran the ball. And it was like, I remember when I wasn't paying much attention to recruiting at the time, I saw Baylor Cup and I was like, oh, Brock has a 5-star tight end. How many catches? Oh, like 10. It's like, okay. Yeah. And it was like, all right, yeah, they just have this monster blocking for the whole time. And yeah, it's like another throwback.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just a reminder that some of these teams in the state don't really play much with a tight end, and there's turnover, right? Like, you usually don't have multiple star tight ends. So, like, Houston lost, you know, Christian Trajan. Well, I don't know what their backup is. None of us do, right? And so how do you kind of grade those guys? And so the top eight, I felt, were pretty easy in terms of, like, placing them on the board. Baylor Cup with his potential, I think, there at number nine. But I had no idea who to put at number 10.
Yeah. All right, yeah, like I said, go check out those. Of course, we've done wide receivers, running backs, and quarterbacks. And then today, offensive linemen dropped. So again, I think this one, I will say, when I looked at this list and I was reading over it, this state's in damn good hands when it comes to offensive linemen, man. I'll just start off. Number one, Kelvin Banks. I mean, this is a future first round pick. It feels like he came in and started and looked stellar right away. Now I'm kind of wondering, because some of these are some, like a guy like Bryce Foster, we know what he can do, but obviously he played, you know, all last year, basically hurt, couldn't really develop in the way that we kind of figured. You know, was there anybody on this list where you were like, I gotta kind of put him here though? Like, Bryce Foster felt like that to me, because talent easily there, right? But last year you probably, you know, it's like, oh, how much can you ding him for missing? And you know, you still know if he starts tomorrow, still one of the best offensive linemen in the state.
Yeah, I mean, for me it was about upside. You know, as a true freshman, he was, you know, developed as one of the best centers not only in that conference but in the nation, and he was doing that at 18 years old, right? I mean, I'm not going to knock a guy for injury. He played four games last year, and then those four games he played, the A&M offensive line looked a lot better than in the eight games that he didn't. And so I think him coming back is going to be a big reason the Aggies rebound and have a much better offensive year this year than they did last year. I think he's one of the top three offensive linemen in the state. I think it's Kelvin Banks. I think it's Patrick Paul. I think it's Bryce Foster. And then there's a gap. And so for me, it was those three guys, even with Foster, you know, missing eight games last year. But Cameron Johnson is right there. You know, like the left guard, left tackle position at Houston is Big 12 ready. That's a Power 5 conference ready offensive line. That's going to be an advantage for them. You know, with Alton McCaskill coming back, Donovan Smith as their quarterback, I think they're going to be a pretty run-heavy offense. I think a lot of that's going to go to the left side of the field.
Yeah, Houston and TCU, are, aside from Texas and A&M, are the only teams with two offensive linemen on here, which, you know, especially for Houston, like you mentioned, first year going to the Big 12 is going to be massive. TCU, that was the calling card of their offense last year, right? That was the reason why their run game was so effective. That was the reason why Max Duggan was able to be so effective throwing the ball. So yeah, the fact that they didn't lose a lot, right? They lost some of their offensive linemen, but they're still going to be pretty good, and they're still going to be in good hands going forward, I would say. So yeah, keep an eye on those. These will continue to drop throughout the next week. What's next? What do we got for, do we go to defense now?
Yeah, we're going to do defensive tackles and then edge. I think it would be hard to just scrunch it into 10 defensive linemen. And so we're going to try to split that one up. And it, you know, gives the defense four positions rather than just three. I may do the same thing with cornerback and safety.
Huh, that's a good point, too.
Also, before moving on, I wanted to ask, too, I know we had hit on it last week, but the podcast came out before your top 10 wide receivers. So you ended up ranking Zachary Franklin first.
Yes, that's a good one.
Xavier Worthy second. Evan Stewart third. Why did you ultimately pick Zachary Franklin? Because I know we did talk about that those three are kind of interchangeable.
Yeah, I felt like they were pretty even, and I could make an argument for each one of them. And so I just had to go with production. And Zachary Franklin has over 300 catches in his career, over 30 touchdowns in his career. If you take the whole state in 2022, he was the leading receiver in catches, in yards and in touchdowns. So for me, he won the triple crown in 2022. He's coming back in 2023. And so he had to be number one. But he's one to watch, right? Though, you know, if you talk to UTSA fans, UTSA coaches, kind of behind the scenes, right? He's one of the ones that they're worried about in the transfer portal. And so it's just another reminder that, you know, these lists are pretty fluid, because who knows where everybody's going to be come August 1st. As we learned last year, Katie Davis got into the transfer portal, then got back out of it. We're in for some twists and turns before this whole thing is over.
Yeah, I was about to say spring camp. So you'll see how some, obviously the, oh my God, the Baylor quarterback news last year. I forgot right. Garrett Hannon transferred after he figured out he wasn't going to get the job. So yeah, I mean, probably I wouldn't be surprised if within the second week of spring camp, we start to see those names kind of figure themselves out. Certainly after spring games, things like that, probably before the spring game, you'll start to see depth charts kind of start to solidify. And yeah, people will be making business decisions as far as they're concerned. So
it was like last year, Jake Bailey transferred after a practice.
I forgot about that.
Mike Bloomgren had seen him earlier that day, and then
found out
that he transferred through compliance later in that day. You know,
followed Alex Brown to SMU.
You know, March, April, May are going to be insane, and then you know, to make this a selfish thing, like it makes the magazine hard.
I was about to say, no, that's mm-hmm. the worst part, is because like that's the worst part for us, I should say. Part of the value of our magazine is the fact that we love having the two deep, and like we love to be able to see, yes, here is the wide receivers, and it's like, oh, Zachary Franklin's gone. He's like, oh, what just happened? You know, there goes the magazine, right? Then you got to go and change probably all Texas team or whatever. Like, luckily Katie Davis came back, but there was
that was the one that made me the most stressed for you, Craven.
Yeah, because it was like too deep, all Texas, best linebacker.
He was all over the magazine, and then just
he was the player feature for North Texas's section as well.
That's right.
God. So let's hope nothing like that happens. Which
how do you think he got back to North Texas? I had to slide up. No, I was joking.
Yeah, exactly.
Offer some of that NIL money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, we'll throw some money. He's like, hey, here's some. Let's go, baby. All right, moving on. We got an interview. Joey McGuire, of course, good friend of the show. He had a pretty good season, I'd say.
He's pretty good at the coaching thing.
Yeah, pretty good. In for a huge 2023 with a lot of expectations. We'll talk a little bit about that. After the interview, he sat down with Mike Craven to give us a little bit of his time, because of course this guy doesn't stop, so he had a little brief window to chat with us. So without further ado, here's Texas Tech head coach Joey McGuire.
Coach, obviously a really great season, a successful season. When it ends and when the transfer portal closes and when recruiting goes away for just a little bit, what does Joey McGuire do to kind of reset in the offseason?
Well, I haven't done anything in 2 years, so I promised my wife that I would take her somewhere. So as soon as that second signing day was over, you know, we signed one young man, a defensive lineman. Then I gave the coaches a week off, and Debbie and I went and sat on a beach in Turks and Caicos. And I don't know if I could relax, though, because the guys are still working back here. And so I told her, I said, I'll always take you somewhere, but we need to do it over spring break. I can't do it while the players are still, you know, in here working. But it was good. It was much needed, you know, I think as much for me, but really a lot for her, because head coach's wife, well, just coach's wife in general, there's a lot on your plate.
Can you explain how crazy that first – I mean, it was really like 15, 16 months that first year since you got there early – just kind of what that process was and how many hours a day you were kind of working and just kind of, yeah, I guess, how long you went without taking a break.
Yeah, you know, Matt Dowdy and I were literally just sitting here talking, because he was saying, man, I don't even remember. I said something about the first year being a blur. And he's like, yeah, I'm doing things in February that I didn't get to do last February. Just, you know, updating stuff. You know, because the one thing that we really tried to do was when I got the job, we tried to make sure that the double T was anywhere and everywhere, you know, and on the Rec'em tours and everything like that. It was a lot. It was fun, though. You know, I loved every second of it, and I'm loving every second of it now. You know, because we're back on the – yesterday I was in Dallas all day, flew back last night and was up ready to go for the for football school. And you know, we just want to make sure to capitalize on what we did last year. But it's a lot. You know, when you're first year and you're trying to get everything in place, there's a lot of times Debbie was coming up here when I first got the job, you know, probably – 8:30, and there'd be a group of us, and she was like, "Is anybody going to go eat?" And we would, you know, Blanche and Blanchard and Coach Martin and different guys would jump in the car. We'd go eat, and we'd be right back up here, you know, trying to put the staff together, trying to put recruiting class together, trying to, you know, organize everything that we wanted to do, you know, in that first year. And then you get through with that and you jump right into spring football and you're trying to install a new offense and a new defense and really a new culture. And so it was a lot, but man, it was fun. It was a fun first year, you know, and I think we're going to be able to build off of that.
I saw a clip of you the other day talking about the stadium, and you were saying that, you know, just like the Double T, you know, they were going to need a special type of crane to get you out of Lubbock, that you were going to die there. And you could see in your face that you were serious. You know, a lot of coaches say that, but not all of them mean it. What about Lubbock? What about Texas Tech? What about this job makes that so true for you?
Well, you know, I mean, I just think there's such a great fit. You know, one, I'm a Texan, you know, I'm a diehard. I am you know, whenever I interviewed for the job, I had the, you know, state flag socks on, you know, Texas state flag. I'm proud to be a Texan, and I'm probably one of those guys that if you're not Texan and you're around me, you probably sometimes go, man, I wish you'd shut up about the state of Texas. And so I think that's one. I think the people here, the passion that they have, one in Lubbock for their city, the passion that the fans have for their university, that draws me. I'm a very passionate person, high energy, and so that even more draws me. The administration and the backing, I mean, everything's down. They bulldozed the south end zone. I mean, we're probably 2 weeks away from starting to where we can start building up. And starting with the towers on each side. And so just the real backing, not talking about it, but hey, this is what we're doing. And you could see that they were serious about it. And then you're at a place that they want to do something special. And, you know, we want to do it for the long haul. We want to do it year in and year out. And we want to do something that, you know, hadn't been done here before. And so it's really attractive, you know, and I love being doubted. I love for that, you know, that chip on your shoulder where you and I both know that's Texas Tech. That's the Red Raiders. That's West Texas. You know, you got a chip on your shoulder and do things that people say you can't do. And so it's a perfect fit. And I mean it, man, you said it. And I hope everybody sees that. Like, you know, because what's the first thing if you're at different jobs that people, we've had people that recruit against us that say, yeah, well, you know, if so-and-so calls Coach McGuire, he's going to be gone, you know, and that's just a soft, non-competitive person saying that, you know, and for me, I want to be here and I want to show everybody that I want to be here and I want to make sure the recruits and the fans and the alumni know that, man, I'm fired up to be a Red Raider.
You know, we've all taken new jobs before and you think you know what it's going to be. And then there are certain situations where it's like, oh, okay, I made the right decision. You know, what was that for you last year? Where it's like, you kind of thought you knew what the job was, but then there was that moment where it was like, okay, we're going to do something big here. And I made the right decision to come here.
Well, there was a couple of them, you know, at different times, you know, like our third, fourth quarter. I'll never forget, we're in Jones AT&T and it's pretty dang cold. And I'm talking to him about quit worrying about, you know, the weather, focus on each other. And Sir Roderick Thompson said, amen, coach, that's what it's all about. And I'm like, oh, wait, we got a team that is starting to get it and they're getting it in a hurry. They're not, you know, you could start seeing that chemistry come together. So that was really big. And then, You know, I thought I really knew what the Red Raiders about. And I saw it in basketball. You know, you see stuff going on in basketball, but you're a spectator. You're part of it. You're not, you know, on the field. And after beating Texas and, you know, it was packed. You know, it was sold out. The students were there early. I remember walking around the field and, you know, they're yelling at me, let's go. And, you know, all chant my name and wreck them and all that stuff. And after that game beating UT, seeing what that meant to the people in the stands and around the state, you could see this is a really special place. It wants to get behind what we're doing here.
I reached out to some sources near you to get some questions. One of the things they wanted me to ask you is what do you call your undershirts?
Oh my gosh, that's so good. That's a great story. What Kenny Perry nicknamed my undershirts, Character in the Cut. And so in 2003, I ordered some McDavid compression shirts and they sent me loose fit. And so I called them and said, hey, I need the compression shirts. What do you want me to do with these loose fit? And they said, keep them. And so they're great shirts, but the sleeves kind of came like down to here. And I put one on and it felt so comfortable. So I just cut the sleeves off. So they're all cut off here. And they're undershirts. So I don't really care what they look like. So like there's literally zigzags everywhere. And so KP nicknamed them Character in the Cut. I'll have one on probably here in about an hour after, you know, I get through with some different things, take a quick shower and get ready. But I wear one every day. I think I had 90 at one time. I'm like at 40. You know, now that's the undershirt.
You know, when I was up there kind of hanging out with you before that Baylor game, you know, y'all went to a movie as a team. What kind of movie, like when you go to a movie or you're picking a movie, what kind of movies you into?
You know, I really like everything. You know, I'm really not a scary movie guy, and we watched a couple of them this year. And, you know, if we can, that week, we just couldn't find anything else, but you know, team movies, I'd rather watch something like inspiring, true story, or something action-packed. You know, we went and saw, you know, the Black Panther, and the guys loved that. And, you know, we saw Woman King. That was probably my favorite that we saw all year, you know. And so that's what I want before the game. But, man, I'm telling you, I'm a movie guy. If I tell you a movie's not any good, never go see it. Now, if I tell you a movie's good, you might not like it, but I watch a lot of movies whenever, you know, I get the downtime.
Out in West Texas, there's plenty of music to go see. What's the kind of the last time you went out and watched a concert?
Well, it was really cool. Last 2 weeks ago, our receiver opened up for Grant Gilbert. So the night before, Thursday night, he reshot Hub City Shakedown in Jones AT&T. So I've got like 2 seconds in the video. And then Friday night, we went to the Blue Light, which is really famous out here. You know, that's where Pat Green got started, and Wade Bowen and Josh Abbott. And so Hayden Wigington, who plays wide receiver for us, played at Midlothian Heritage. His dad's a head coach at Allen. He opened up, and it was awesome because he can really play and sing, but it's the first time that he's had a full band behind him, and he crushed it. And so the last one, I went to the Blue Light and saw Hayden Wigington, and then Grant Gilbert stayed for Grant Gilbert. I'm a big fan of him, and I'm a country music guy. So that's what's really cool, being out here, whether it's the Blue Light or Cook's Garage. And we've had some really good concerts. And then I think we've got a couple this summer. I think Luke Bryan's coming out here, you know, to play at, you know, our basketball facility. And so fired up to see him.
Do you remember the first concert you ever went to?
It was probably Van Halen in Reunion Arena. It was either Van, man, I saw some really cool concerts whenever I was growing up or in high school, but Van Halen, I saw Michael Jackson in Reunion Arena. So I've seen some, you know, different genres, and but I think it was Van Halen. I don't remember if it was their jump tour of what they called it, but man, they were awesome.
They're pretty good live. Yeah. Did anything surprise you your first year as a college head coach, whether good, bad, and different, just kind of, hey, I didn't really expect that, or that's different than what it was in high school, or just whatever, you know, there's sometimes in new jobs where just like something kind of comes out of the blue.
You know, I think having such a great staff and everybody being on the same page, you know, if there was something, you know, we probably tackled it together, whether it was off the field, on the field. I mean, the surprises were like good surprises, you know. It surprised me how fast the team came together. It surprised me, you know, that they really bought into the culture. That's, you know, the we ask them to do a lot of stuff, you know, within the rules, but then we also, these guys are coming here to get an education, and they're coming here to hopefully develop into NFL players. And so you've got to do a lot of stuff off the field away from here if you want to be that great. And we had some really good ex-players and some really good ex-players of mine. Jalen Petrie and Terrell Bernard came out and talked to the team and just talked about like stuff you got to do. And it surprised me how fast those guys bought in. I think we have a great model academically. We had our highest GPA that Texas Tech's ever had in the history of football. We had a 3.13 team GPA. And so I think just that overall buy-in is what surprised me the most.
Spring practice is just right around the corner. How different will spring practice number two look like compared to number one, just because y'all can hit the ground running a little bit differently than maybe you could last year?
You know, I think the speed of practice, which, you know, can shorten practice, I think that's going to be good. I think as much fundamentals as we worked, and that's what we believe in, I think we can take that to a whole nother level because you're not installing it and teaching a brand new offense and defense, you know, and you never want fundamentals to take a back seat, but sometimes just the nature of a brand new offense and defense, sometimes that happens. And so I think, you know, we'll be able to really dig and dive into that. And then we've got some, this roster is very, like you have, it's not a balanced roster in age. You have a really old group and you have a really young group. Like half of the scholarship players are freshmen or redshirt freshmen. And so we've got a great opportunity in the spring to grow the older guys enough. Like I don't need to see Jalen Hutchins taking a ton of reps. You know, I need him to do individual. I need him to work on his pass rush one-on-one. He'll get some stuff, but I need Trey McAlpin, you know, who's a redshirt freshman who didn't get to play last year. I need him to be taking reps. I need Duda Banks to be taking a lot of reps. And we've got some really, really good young linebackers. And so this spring will look a little bit different on how we balance the old guys' reps and the young guys' reps.
You know, quarterback was a spot we talked about a lot last year. You had three different guys start four games. Tyler Shuck, Baron Morton are back. How do you kind of go about, you know, using that competition and having those guys compete during the spring?
Yeah, you know, like today, Tyler went with the ones. Thursday, Baron will go with the ones. I think if there was a situation where I had a true freshman mid-year and then a senior, then yeah, you can say, hey, let's create some competition, but it's not really like true competition because the freshman is so far away from, you know, really pushing that guy. We're too deep all the way across the board at every position and some more, and there is a lot of competition. And I tell the guys all the time, look, if we started tomorrow, this is who would probably start. But you can't say – you can't have, like, the whole DNA of your program being the brand, the toughest, hardest working, most competitive team in the country. And that last part says most competitive, and then say, well, yeah, I just think I deserve to be the starter. And so we're going back and forth. You know, I think if we started a game tomorrow against whoever, you know, Tyler would be out there. But Tyler also knows that there's a very talented young man that has started games and have won games at the Division I level that's just not going to give it to him. And we have, you know, our left guard between Jacoby Jackson and Cole Spencer. Cole Spencer didn't get to play last year. We're a lot different in the offensive line right now. But I tell Jacoby, I said, man, you started 8 games. You're not – just don't give it to him. And so iron sharpens iron, and these guys are really getting after each other, you know, and doing a good job and have a great attitude.
And this is the time of year where I think a lot of articles come out about, like, what we would change about college football and you know, the presidents start talking, the coaches start talking. You know, if Joey McGuire is kind of the czar of college football, you know, what are one or two things that you think need to be altered, either – just the calendar or, you know, from the day-to-day, you know, life of a college student or the coaches, what kind of needs to be changed right now?
Well, I think they got to be real careful. You know, I think that some of the change might seem good, but, you know, for instance, I heard one of the commissioners say that he wants to change the December signing day. Well, that's a person that's never been on the road and never recruited in his life. And I would say that the December signing day, move it up if you want to change it. Don't move it back to the old one because, number one, you're going to have mid-years. We had 12 mid-years. So what's the difference between me getting 12 mid-years signed versus 24? Is it? I mean, like, come on. December's hectic. But January is really nice that you've signed your class and you can get a year ahead evaluating 24s and 25s. So my coaches would say where he said that December and January was really hectic. My coaches would tell you, yeah, December was really hectic, but January was, we could take a deep breath and go see those young guys and not have to worry about signing and holding on to kids in February. And so I think we got to be really careful about, you know, how fast we say what's better for the sport. Now, if you're just talking about games and stuff like that, I watched the XFL the other night. I love that they can, in real time, almost, or 2 minutes, evaluate a replay and speed up the game. At the Power 5 level, I know in the Big 12, we have the Rock. We have people watching every single game. We have a replay official in the booth. I don't know why we have to go over and look in a little TV screen whenever somebody can be in somebody's ear. I saw it happen in the Texas Bowl. You know, in the Texas Bowl, they replayed it in within 2 minutes, and we're rolling. And so, you know, I know there's a big deal about speeding the game up to a certain extent. You know, that's an easy way to do it. And so, like to see some of that. You know, the games, the one thing we have to do is be careful to not mess with the greatest game in the world. If we are going to change anything, let's make sure that it's the right thing and not just fundamentally mess with a game that, man, it's incredible. And you see it, you know, in national championship games, you see it in the Super Bowl. I mean, it's everybody watches it, everybody loves it. And so we got to protect it and be really careful when we just spout stuff out about how to change stuff.
Last one, with the expanded playoff coming up and the Big 12 being where it's at, you know, you were part of that Baylor staff when y'all went and won the Big 12 and won the Sugar Bowl. You know, last year TCU goes undefeated in the regular season and then goes to the college football playoff. You know, what makes you believe, being in that room, that Texas Tech is right there as well to kind of be one of those teams that's going to be competing for Big 12 championships and playoff spots over these next few years?
You know, we've got a really good roster. We've got a good coaching staff, and we've got a great administration, you know, and we can continue to build off of that. You know, in 19, you know, if we would have played LSU, if we would have beat OU, you know, in overtime, at Baylor. And then in 21, you know, we play in the Sugar Bowl, but if we don't lose a game earlier in the season, we possibly, you know, are in the Final Four. And so I think there's really good football being played. You know, I think you got to be really careful building up certain conferences. You know, I watched the national championship game, and you know, it got out of hand. But I do believe TCU, you know, deserved to be there. But after the game, one of my favorite dudes, Kirk Herbstreit, you know, says, you know, the SEC is ahead, and he put in the Pac-10. Well, I just know the Pac-10 champion got beat by the Big 12 champion the week before. And so you got to be careful who you're putting in that conversation. Georgia was the best team in the country last year, and they beat everybody they played, and anybody else could have lined up against them, and they were going to beat them. But Big Ten had a chance to be in that, and TCU won that game. And, you know, and so we got to be real careful, you know, of like this conference is more dominant than this conference. I remember many years ago hearing Bob Stoops talk about, you can talk about teams being dominant. You got to be careful about talking about conferences being dominant, because there's some top heavy different conferences. And so Alabama's ruled college football for a while. Georgia is now stepping in there. You put them in any other conference, and then all of a sudden that's going to be the best conference. So I think you got to be really careful whenever you say that. Saying all that, I'm saying that the Big 12 should have been in that game last year. And I think if you play and win the Big 12 and you're the top one or two teams when they expand the conference playoffs, and you've got an opportunity to play in it, and we expect to be in it. You know, they brought me here to win the Big 12 and to play in those games. And, man, this staff and these players, we're not going to shy away from that. We're excited about it.
Coach, I always enjoy our conversations, and I'll be out in Lubbock, you know, in April sometime, do some magazine stuff.
Can't wait, man. You're crushing all the top tens. You know, I mess with you, but it's always fun because you're my guy. So thank you so much, man.
I need to stop doing those because it's a thankless endeavor, you know.
I thank you, even though I give you a hard time.
All right, Coach. All right, be good. Get that undershirt on.
Yes, sir.
Thanks again to Joey McGuire for sitting down with us and chatting. It's always have you ever had a bad interview with Joey McGuire?
No. And I, you know, what's fun about Joey is like, I forget I'm interviewing him sometimes.
Right,
so
yeah, sure.
So, like, honestly, I think some of the better interviews are with coaches that I don't know as well.
Sure.
Because, like, sure, you're really kind of gathering information and you're asking from a place of curiosity.
Yeah.
But I know them so well that it's hard, you know, so it's like Trailer too. It's like, what, you know, I'll text them the night before and be like, now, what do you want to talk about? Like on the, on the podcast, you know? And what I love about Joey is he's like football, 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 you know? Yeah. Cause like, this is what he does, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It's not a hobby or a passion. Like, it's an addiction. Like, it just is, like, in the best way possible. You know, I started it off with the question because I think it's funny. What does Joey McGuire do to unplug, right? And his answer is like, well, Debbie made me, you know, so we went to Turks and Caicos. But I couldn't even relax because my guys are working out back in Texas Tech. I told her, I told her next year we got to do it in spring break because then everybody's off and I can feel right. Like I'm off, you know? And so he's just wired that way. And like, as somebody who, you know, tries to approach the job in a similar way or whatever, like, it's just fun to like, it's not in this like bad mood, negative. I'm like, I'm just beating on people and like, you right. know, whatever. Like he like literally wakes up in the morning and is just like, man, this is freaking awesome that I get to yeah. coach football at Texas Tech. And, you know, that's refreshing. It's fun. And so, yeah, I don't think I've ever, not only not a bad interview, I don't think I've ever had a bad conversation.
I was about to say, yeah, conversation. Everybody. Yeah. So let's spend a little bit of time on Tech because, and we'll get into a little bit of the Big 12 too, as a whole, because obviously they'll be one of the key figures in the new Big 12 going forward in 2024. But 2023, we were worried about last year heading into the year, right? Because Joey McGuire came in with such fanfare because of his personality, because of his electricity, he came in with a lot of hype and we admittedly bought into it, right? We're like, this guy, yeah, sure, this guy's gonna be awesome. Then we started to look at the schedule and we're like, is this first year gonna be awesome, right? And we started to have a little bit of fear. It's like, there's a possibility they miss a bowl this year. And just just because what Tech has historically been post Mike Leach and kind of the job he needed to do there. And then they had their best year since Mike Leach. So now we're looking at 2023. What are early expectations, do you think, for Texas Tech versus what maybe now that the schedule's out and all that versus what maybe they could do? Is it set up? I have my answer, but is it set up for the continuing roller coaster up, you know, or are they in for a little bit of a downturn?
That's a hard question because, you know, I think the schedule's tough again this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what it is, right? The Big 12 is just full of so many toss up games that you could convince me they win 9 games. You could convince me they win 6 games in the season. They may have played about the same and just a couple bounces of the ball, a couple turnovers, mm-hmm. couple, you know, weird calls here and there, right? Like that's how even a lot of it is across the Big 12. But, you know, when I go and I think about the positions that I find important in football to dictate who I think is going to be successful, it starts at quarterback, and they got two of them. Tyler mm-hmm. Shuck, Baron Morton, both of those guys, I think, could go win a lot of conference games. They have a running back in Taj Brooks. My question is the offensive line. Cole Spencer is coming back, the transfer from Western Kentucky that never got to play last year. That's going to change some things around. They got some depth. But that's my major question on the offensive side of the ball. Can they protect better? Can they run the football better with the offensive line than they did last year? Because that's the way they take a jump offensively. And then defensively, a lot of it's back. The secondary is going to be pretty good. I think up the middle at defensive tackle is probably their strength with Jalen Hutchins and Tony Bradford. But they lose Tyree Wilson on the outside, and getting that pass, you know, pressure and creating havoc and making offenses have to deal with that is something that you just can't replace, right? Like there's not mm-hmm. another top 10 pick at defensive end walking around in Lubbock right now. There's just not many of them, right? There's two or three in the nation every single year. Tyree Wilson's not there. They're going to have to manufacture pressure in a way they didn't have to in a lot of parts last year. That's going to be the biggest concern for me for Texas Tech. If they can figure out their offensive line and then it can generate pass rush, I think they're in for 8, 9, 10 wins.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that the schedule breaks pretty easily. I'd say if you had to set the, I won't say over under necessarily, but I'll say this. I think the floor is there for a bowl game, right? The floor. I really think this is a favorable schedule to where they could, I'll say walk theoretically, they could walk to 6 wins. I really do think that, right?
And that should be the floor every year.
Yes, 100%. And like you said, of course, ball could bounce a different way. All of a sudden, you know, I don't know, West Virginia could come back and bite them, right? They go to Morgantown. So, like, who knows what happens there early in the year. But regardless, that's a game that they're favored in. They should theoretically win. Sure, I would pencil them in for at least 6 wins, more or less. And that more or less keeps this hype train going, right? Joey McGuire is going to be recruiting the hell out of the state. He's already made a big splash. You have a feature on Will Hammond out of Hutto, right? He's going to try to hold on to a pretty big recruiting class there in 2024. I believe there was a player that I think they're in pretty hard for Terry Bussey, because he was retweeting something from Terry Bussey. I saw Joey McGuire was, so like he's going to be in a big play for him. So they're, I think 2024, they did a good job recruiting 2023. 2024 is obviously his first big recruiting class. I'm really fascinated to see what they can do, if they can hold on to Will Hammond. Right, he's going to be a 4-star by every other metric. I know he is for Texas football. And if they can nab somebody like a Terry Bussey or anything like that from this class, it's going to be pretty special if they can pull something off 7, 8, 9 wins even.
I was going to say, just not to mention their non-conference schedule is pretty favorable. I mean, they play
They got Oregon, right?
Oregon at home and Tarleton at home too. So their non-conference schedule goes pretty much in their favor.
I think this is all gearing up for 2024, and Joey hinted on it in the interview we did earlier. You know, a lot of his roster is freshmen and redshirt freshmen. Like he has not gone heavy transfer portal, heavy JUCO ranks and made this roster old. He's kind of starting it from scratch. And so they are way ahead of schedule with 8 wins last year, the bowl win, beating Texas, beating Oklahoma. I think if they finish with a similar 7-8 win, you know, they go 7-5 in the regular season, win their bowl game, that keeps the momentum going, because this is all building towards 2024, right? Like the whole landscape of college football changes in 2024. And I'm not just talking about Texas and Oklahoma leaving, it's the expansion of the playoffs. And now you just got to win the Big 12. And so they're putting themselves in the position where it's not about wins right now. Although obviously, I mean, Joey McGuire is one of the most competitive people I know. Like they're trying to win every single freaking football game of all time. Like I'm not saying that wins aren't important, But you're trying to put yourself in a position to win year in, year out, not just right away. And I think he's doing a good job of that to gear up for 2024, to where when Texas and Oklahoma leaves and the Big 12 champion gets into the playoff, and maybe even the second place team in the Big 12 gets into the expanded playoff, can Texas Tech be in that conversation with Oklahoma State, with Cincinnati, with TCU, with Houston, with those kind of programs to be jockeying for that spot? My answer is yes. I don't know what's going on there that doesn't lead you to believe that. The recruiting has picked up. The on-field results are already picked up. The NIL money is there if you're not paying attention. And also, if you've been blind, they're about to make the facilities in Lubbock above top-notch.
It's
going to be state-of-the-art. And so, you know, that oil money is going to get spent, right? And there is a big alumni base in Texas Tech that is different than the other in-state Big 12 schools. And so Joey is at the right spot. And if he gets this going all in the right direction on the field, there's nothing stopping Texas Tech from being that pesky fly in the college football playoff on a, you know, regular yearly basis.
Yep. They just, I believe Texas Tech released some concept art for the proposed facility. And yeah, it looks like anything you'll see in the SEC, right? It looks like something you'll see in any major college athletic facility. It's a goal of $100 million, and they've already had $87 million committed. So again, money is not going to be an issue here. And if you, again, you're going to, theoretically, you have Baron Morton, right? So you have your quarterback, right? The face of your program in fold. And yeah, they're on a trajectory. Let's look at 2024 a little bit and take a little bit of an examination, because obviously, especially until Houston gets its stuff together, TCU and Tech and Baylor, let's put Baylor in there as well, probably are the easy ones to say, like, you know, depending on how you feel about UCF and whatever Cincinnati looks like under Scott Satterfield. But theoretically, the three legacy Big 12 programs are going to be the ones that are the big fish now. Who do you think positions themselves better in 2024? Let's look at just 2024, that first year, because like you mentioned, that is the first year that the playoff expands and all that stuff. So that first year, 2024, if you can project 2 years in advance, who is positioning themselves best to be right now on paper the team that should be the Big 12 favorite?
I think I would rank it TCU, Texas Tech, Baylor. In that order. And the reason I'm kind of down on Baylor is, one, the NIL money, that they don't have. TCU's got DFW, even though they don't have a big alumni base.
Sure.
Baylor's got the small alumni base, and it's not in a Metroplex area. And so, like, where does all that NIL money come from? How does that work? I know that there's plenty of money in Waco and in the alumni base, but they don't have 40,000 students all the time, and they don't have Dallas, Fort Worth. And so I think, and they've had two losing records in the 3 years that Dave Aranda has been there. Are they more 2021 or are they more 2022? I'm going to need more empirical data before I make that announcement. I've seen Sonny Dykes take this TCU team, you know, from 5-7 to 12-0. And I know what Fort Worth is. I know what DFW means to these recruits. And I've seen guys like JoJo Earl and Tommy Brockemeyer already transferred back into that program. So I have plenty of faith in what TCU is doing. They're recruiting the best, and I'm a Stars Matter guy. I just am, you know, with my background. And so I think I'm going to give TCU the advantage, but I think Texas Tech is nipping right on those heels. And if they can flip, you know, a few of these big fish, like you were talking about, if they can peel off a Terry Bussey, if they can get in for real on Micah Hudson, if they can keep that top line talent out in West Texas, there's no reason Texas Tech can't be the best team in the state. We've seen it done under Mike Leach for a decade. And so if he can get it rolling in all those directions, I think Tech is right behind TCU. The one I worry about, the one I think the most about, is Baylor. Just because I don't know what that program is under Dave Aranda on a year in, year out basis.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that those rankings fit, because you mentioned making the playoff for TCU show that they already had talent there, right? They had conference championship caliber talent there when they maybe didn't have the program pulling in the right direction, or at least pulling all in the right direction. I think the floor, I think, for them is definitely set a little bit higher. That gives them a little bit of an edge. But again, I can't stress enough how much this facilities could be a game changer for Tech, right? We've seen that happen with so many programs, right? Obviously, the most notorious example is probably Oregon, right? Where, like, you get the Nike Phil Knight money, boom, all of a sudden you become national title contenders overnight. I'm not saying that exactly happens, because obviously Nike's its own animal, but it just shows how, I guess Boone Pickens would be another good example for Oklahoma State, right? That would be more of an applicable example towards like all of a sudden you become a contender overnight and boom, everybody wants to play there. You get recruits you never did before, things like that. So yeah, I can't wait to see where this goes because yeah, the new Big 12 just becomes such a huge, I mean, it becomes the Wild West almost, right? There isn't the Texas or Oklahoma, right? Literally, there isn't the team that you have to pencil in as number one, or at least, you know, theoretically have as number one and number two because they're gone. And now it opens it up to everybody where, you know, again, barring this Texas Tech thing that could potentially make them a little bit of a front runner, there's no other team you could say, yeah, of course, this team would be the one to move into first place because they haven't. There hasn't been that consistency for many of these teams before historically for, you know, good stretches of time. So, yeah, this will be something entertaining to watch because I'd say those three right now easily are the ones to watch. But like you mentioned with Baylor, who knows what that team looks like, right? Is that team, like you mentioned, is that championship team the aftermath of Matt Rhule? Potentially. But, you know, we also know that Dave Aranda is a good coach. So, does his recruiting catch up to his coaching ability? I don't know. Yeah, it'll be something to watch going forward.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the Big 12 becomes the most intriguing conference in the nation. Not maybe the most talented, right? That's going to be the SEC. That's going to be the Big 10. But it's going to be like the English Premier League in soccer, right? Where like the 14th team can beat the first team. Like it's not all that crazy. There's not the Real Madrids and the Barcelonas and the Bayerns and the PSGs above everybody else. Like it's going to be one of those conferences that every single year, the team picked sixth could go win. The team picked seventh in the Big 12 just played for the national championship game. Like right. That's with Texas and Oklahoma in the conference. And so I think it's just going to be one of those, you know, take a dart, throw it against a board, and you'll have as much a chance to predict that conference as any. And isn't that what we all love about college football? That's the whole point. Sure. And so I think it's going to be, you know, everybody tries to make the jokes and stuff, but I think it's going to be the most fun conference to follow.
No, 100%. I agree there. All righty, that'll do it for us. And yeah, me and Mallory will be off to San Antonio watching some basketball for the next week, next couple of days, and we'll be gearing up for spring practice all over the state. Yeah, be sure to keep it texfootball.com. Like I said, Mike Craven's top Texas 10s will continue to drop. Remember, follow us for that big announcement on Wednesday afternoon at noon. We're very excited for that, and you'll be hearing more from us in regards to that on the next episode and in the coming weeks as well. So, yeah, for Mallory Hartley, Mike Craven, remember, we have interviewed, 12 of the 13 college coaches in the state. Jimbo Fisher, give us a call. Always go Rutgers. Oh, yeah, by the way, Rutgers stole, who was the defense? The Lamar.
DC,
SFA.
SFA?
Oh, no. SFA?
Yeah.
Okay,
no, maybe it was Lamar.
No, it was Lamar.
Okay, it was Lamar. Yeah, so the bit actually has a meaning now. So like Rutgers actually stole a coach from Texas. So yeah, go Rutgers. There's a little tie that actually makes it relevant for us.